this session. The session you have read about in the program, and that's why you have come, I believe. It's a session with the AIDS ambassadors. And you see a number of AIDS ambassadors here at the table. My name is Lennart Jellmacher. I'm the Swedish AIDS ambassador, and I'm not going to say much more about that because the session is about what an AIDS ambassador is. So I will, at the beginning, only introduce my colleagues here at the table. And then we have asked a couple of friends to provide their views briefly about what they expect about an AIDS ambassador. And the first one of those friends, Aisha Russells from the Health Global Access Project, will have to leave because she is sharing another session within a few minutes. So we will be very quick in the beginning here. But I would like to introduce first Sigrun Mögedal from Norway, my Norwegian colleague. And then we have from France, Louis-Charles Biosat. And then we have from Australia, Murray Proctor. And we have from the Netherlands, Paul Beckers. I don't know if we have our Spanish colleague in the room. If you are in the room, I would like you to come also up here to the table. We'll come back later on, but to really take advantage of you, Aisha, I will give you the floor right now. We did this to be a little bit more lively discussion. What do you expect? And we want you also to very much engage in this debate. But Aisha will start to say what she expects from an AIDS ambassador. Please.
Thank you very much, Lennart, and thanks everyone for joining this important session today. I want to apologize in advance that I'll have to leave literally in just 3 minutes. My name is Aisha Russell. I work with an AIDS organization called HealthGap. I'm also the developed country board member for representing the developed country NGOs to the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, which, as you might know, has three board delegation seats assigned to civil society, one from developed country NGOs, one from developing country NGOs, and a third from communities living with and or affected by HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. So I was asked by Lennart to give a few opening comments very briefly on what, from civil society, one impression is about the role of an AIDS ambassador and the value that an AIDS ambassador can bring to the fight against HIV. So first, I think it's important to mention that the existence of these kinds of public leadership roles in the middle of a political context where several donor countries are signaling that they are decreasing their commitment to disease-specific investments or potentially stepping back or stepping away from those investments. I think that's one reason why it's quite important that we collaborate and align with entities like AIDS ambassadors. It's a way in which politically donor governments can interact with civil society. And at the same time, it's a way that politically, internally, the commitment and the prioritization of any particular donor government can include and maintain a commitment to priority diseases, in particular HIV. So there's an advocacy role that's not just external that we'd like to see from AIDS ambassadors, but also one that's inward-looking and that ensures that HIV remains high on the agenda of key donors. I think, second, it's important that we'd like to see from civil society some level of coherence, because, of course, HIV is not just a disease that relates to the health sector, but something that spills over into trade, into other aspects of development, into human rights. So perhaps there's a way in which, and maybe there's a case study or two that the AIDS ambassadors can provide, where they were able to play a role in flagging how a country's policy around HIV was somehow out of step with its policies around trade and access to medicines, for example, or human rights. And it would be very interesting to hear more about what the challenges were in trying to bring some policy coherence across multiple sectors while still maintaining a diplomatic role and position. I think it's also important and obvious to mention that we rely as civil society on AIDS ambassadors as somehow openings to other political figures and other decision makers and brokers of power They are people we see and relate to in various environments, and we need to maintain and strengthen our own collaboration and engagement with all of them. One danger that I think it's important to relate that we've experienced in the U.S., for example, is how assigning an AIDS ambassador can somehow be a proxy for commitment, or at the same time, an AIDS ambassador might experience some marginalization in his or her own government. So I think it'd be interesting to hear frank comments about that. In many years ago, some people in the audience might remember this, the U.S. First developed something called an AIDS czar. That's what we informally called it. It was a domestic kind of point person on HIV. And while symbolically it appeared to be quite a great sort of label, when you got right down to it, that was a person who didn't have the power, the resources, the political support in order to actually get critical things done. So I think it'd be important to hear how do you avoid that, how you avoid some of the possibilities of marginalization, even while these tremendous sorts of titles like AIDS ambassador get assigned to very competent individuals. We want to ensure that AIDS ambassadors don't end up being somehow symbols of commitment and accountability rather than the actual work that we all must do together. Looking forward, finally, and again, I apologize, I really do have to leave, but looking forward to the future, I think a challenge to put on the table is how in this shifting terrain of aid financing that little by little seems to exclude disease-specific investments, we work together to ensure that HIV and the exceptional response that it requires stays firmly on the agenda. I think second, it's important looking to the future to hear from AIDS ambassadors. One challenge we're facing in civil society is how to support the mobilization of independent, vibrant, developing country-led voices that can stimulate increased and high-quality expressions of demand to global health initiatives, like the Global Fund, like PEPFAR, like Gavi. Right now we have a lot of resources, not as much as we need, but a lot more than we had. But the demand from countries is often still very timid, and I think that civil society is a bit of a missing link. These are the voices that can insist on ambition and bold requests for funding from country governments. So in what way are AIDS ambassadors in your country work relating to this need and relating to the fact that that capacity is not fully realized, not invested in enough, and not fully supported? Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Aisha, and I'm really sorry you have to leave, because I'm sure otherwise you would have followed up on several of your remarks. But this was very helpful for our debate, and thank you also for adding on in your own presentation there. And you play a very important role in many fora, including the Global Fund Board. I don't know if Sujata Rao from India has arrived yet into the room. If that is not the case, I will give the floor to Sujata Rao when she arrives. And instead, very soon give the floor to the first one of my colleagues. In many of these sessions, you hear from the chair how the chair is presenting the others at the panel and reading from long descriptions. I'm not going to do that today, but I instead want my colleague briefly in the opening of their remarks to say a few words about their background and where they are placed in the system, so to say, and how they became AIDS ambassadors. I believe it's better to have that from them directly. And now when Aisha has spoken and she had to rush away, as you could see, I will only take 2 minutes to introduce myself again, Lennart Jellmarker from Sweden. And I have been an AIDS ambassador since 2003, for 5 years. And when I was appointed, that was because the Swedish government at that time decided to do much more on AIDS in our development work, in our international work. And we decided to do that through our existing channels, to do that through multilateral work, to do that through multilateral work, and to do that in cooperation with civil society, faith-based organizations, civil society organizations, business, and many others. And Then also the government felt that since we didn't establish a new structure for doing this AIDS work, they still wanted somebody to take an extra look at the work. And that's the reason why the government established a post as an AIDS ambassador, and I was appointed this ambassador. So that's for 5 years. Many times when I describe myself, I'm doing that as an activist, lobbyist, but also a coordinator. So I try to play different roles in the Swedish system, but you will hear more from colleagues about how they view their roles in the system. To work with different people, and I'm going to say this at the very beginning, and I will stop after that, but not to forget it. This morning I went to the Global Village to meet a group of young people, to meet youth. And I believe we all agree on the importance of young people in the fight. And when we were sitting there discussing with the young people, I committed to work for, and you can see that, I have that here on my jacket, I commit to youth. I committed to work for that include young people even more in the Swedish policy on HIV and AIDS in our international work, but also to work for that young people will be even better represented at the next AIDS conference. So the organizers of the conference will hear from me, I suppose from many others on that, but to be really part of the planning, implementation and follow-up. And I believe that's one role we can play as AIDS ambassadors, to commit to work for things like that. So I have committed to the young people, and I believe you will hear about more commitments. If there is still no Sujata Rao in the room, I would like to give the floor to the first colleague, and that would be Paul Beckers from Holland, from the Netherlands. And Paul, to present your views on the title for today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lennart. So you want me to introduce myself also and then give the comments? Good. Well, my name is Paul Beckers. I'm the AIDS Ambassador of the Netherlands since 3 years. And the question of Lennart, how are you positioned in the structure of your government? I'm not a full-time AIDS ambassador. I am also a director of a department that deals, amongst others, with health. The disadvantage being that, you know, you can't spend all your time that you wish to spend on specifically in HIV/AIDS. The added value, though, is that you're well integrated into the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Development Cooperation, which is one in our system. Another big added value is that I can rely on the enormous capacity of the enormous good staff that we have in the ministry. Some of them are present here, and they are automatically not only supporting the director, but automatically supporting the AIDS ambassador. And that's why I can do the work that I am doing. Good. My views on the AIDS ambassador, what is an AIDS ambassador? What should he or she do? Talking about a she, one of the things that we might want to change in the future is looking at more of a gender balance. You see here five people, five AIDS ambassadors. One of them is a woman. I must say that one woman does have the analytical capacity that is pretty much the equivalent of the sum of the rest of us. No offense, gentlemen. But I think in general, we should also look more, if we start having more AIDS ambassadors, which I think the world should do, we should also be aware of the gender balance. But having an AIDS ambassador, if a government decides to have an AIDS ambassador, the government makes a statement that it thinks it's a priority. It's more than a priority than other issues. In the Netherlands, we have for two specific issues, we have an ambassador, human rights and HIV/AIDS. And what the government is saying that it believes they are fundamental issues. HIV/AIDS is fundamental to other developmental processes, and that's why it nominates an AIDS ambassador. But it's also an acknowledgement of the nature, the complex nature of HIV/AIDS. Fida, welcome. It's a new AIDS ambassador of Spain. Started 10 days ago. Welcome. But it's also acknowledgement of the complex nature of HIV/AIDS, the fact that it affects many other areas, development cooperation, that working on MDG 6 has a direct effect on the other MDGs. And that's also the challenge for us AIDS ambassadors, that we are positioned to build a bridge between these two areas. It was also mentioned by Asia. HIV/AIDS is not limited to health. It deals with, she was mentioning, trade issues, access to medicine. I would add security aspects of societies, economic aspects, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we are well positioned to also stress the exceptionality of the AIDS response on the one hand, but at the same time try to create to create effective linkages to that broader development agenda. And the third aspect I would like to mention here is that AIDS ambassadors, if having an AIDS ambassador, you want us to reach out to others, to build a bridge with civil society, faith-based organization, corporate life, create partnerships, be instrumental in that, unify them in that important struggle to fight HIV/AIDS. Now, coming back to what Asia said, I think AIDS ambassadors have that unique position of combining activism and political leadership. We can combine that wonderful world of AIDS activism that we also see here in this conference with the political level. Let me elaborate a little bit on both issues, activism and the political leadership. Activism, we should make a difference between the domestic and the international responsibility. I think domestically we have to make sure that AIDS doesn't slip off the agenda, the political agenda in our own countries, and we have to sensitize others on the broad implication of HIV/AIDS. That's part of our responsibility at home. And internationally, we have to make sure that countries stick to their commitments, for instance, on universal access. We have to tell the G8 to walk the talk, to stick to their commitments. But we also have to be willing to talk to the Vatican. We have to be vocal on issues, show courage, discuss sensitive issues, talk about drug use, homophobia, moral issues, gender violence. Asia was mentioning the word advocate. I think we should be advocates. We should be advocates for the JIPA principle and to promote youth participation. Put issues on the agenda. That's our role as activists, domestically and internationally. And then the political leadership. Also two layers. Yes, we represent political leadership. We represent the ministers, our government, also domestically and internationally, within the UN, the EU, bilaterally. And sometimes, I want to comment what Asia was saying as a risk of being a proxy, I think that is there. I don't think we can be marginalized too much, but yes, there is a possibility, a risk, that government think, we have an AIDS ambassador, he or she deals with that, you know, no concern, let's not, I don't have to deal with it as a minister. That risk is there. But if you're a politician, if you're smart, you may also use this AIDS ambassador to convey messages that you think are too difficult to convey yourself. They're too sensitive for you as a politician to say, but you have your AIDS ambassador that you can make that say. That's not a proxy. I think that's making good use of your ambassador. But aside from representing the political leadership, also I think you implement it. We're part of it. We're the embodiment of the political leadership. How? By having the expertise, by having the overview of the broader issues, also the development issues, by being politically savvy, be aware of the risks, and I think that's important to stress, by using the right of initiative, because that's what we as AIDS ambassadors have. We can explore new avenues. We can go beyond the traditional path, dare to address other leaderships on sensitive issues, dare to pressure for involvement of civil society, youth participation. But also challenge old habits and convictions of the AIDS community. Let me mention two. When the Vatican is condemned because of its condom policy, the AIDS community should not at the same time ignore the tremendous worth and value of Catholic organizations on the ground. And we have to stress the AIDS, we have to convey it to the AIDS community. When you're talking about PEPFAR, the U.S. is condemned for, I'm talking about PEPFAR 1, for the fact that for the abstinence-only policy, I think it's our duty to also show that 93% of the money is not going towards abstinence-only, and stress the tremendous contribution of the U.S., and is still the biggest distributor of condoms. So also I think that's a responsibility of the AIDS ambassador. So to kind of summarize, I think the unique role we have, responsibility, is combining the HIV/AIDS with the broader development issues and the activism and political leadership. Let me just give one example. Universal access. I mean, that's what we all have to talk about. That's what we're committed to. Now, what should we do as AIDS ambassadors? First of all, domestically, make sure our government remains committed, our government remains committed to universal access. Internationally, hold other governments accountable. Let them stick to their commitments. Tell international agencies, be it WHO, UNICEF, UNAIDS, to stick to the recommendations from the Global Task Team. Do what they're supposed to do, not more, but do that well. And we have to make sure that is happening. Make sure that universal access doesn't get diffused and buried under other issues, such as the discussion of national custard plan and the international health partnership. Make sure civil society and key populations are sufficiently represented and involved in the process of universal access. And last but not least, be a guardian of the GIPA principle. That's, as far as universal access is concerned, I think the responsibility of all of us. Let me end here there, Leonard. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we'll come back to many of the questions you addressed, both the content of what we are trying to do, the complexity about the pandemic, the need to address all the complex matters, but also the different way we can do that. I also would like to welcome our new Swedish, Spanish colleague that arrived and sitting next to Paul up there, Fidel López Álvarez, and you're most welcome to us. It's very difficult to see, so if Sujata Rao has arrived into the room, I hope she will come up here. If not, we will continue with our list of speakers up here. And what we will do now is we will listen to one more of the AIDS ambassadors, and then we will open up for questions from you, from the floor, before we continue. We will not wait with the questions till the end. We want them to feed into the discussion here. But the second colleague is from France, Louis Charles. Louis Charles Biasat, and I'm glad to give you the floor.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. So I am Louis-Charles Viossat, the French HIV/AIDS and Communicable Disease Ambassador. I am the third HIV/AIDS and Communicable Disease Ambassador for France since 2003, and I've been appointed around 18 months ago. I belong to the Ministry of Foreign and European Affairs, but I have a mission letter from the Minister and Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Finance, which gives me a clear but often challenging role of supervision and coordination of the different administrations in charge of HIV/AIDS and communicable disease international policy. Well, as Paul spoke very well, and as I share a lot of his comments, or all of his comments, actually, so I will be much shorter, but just let me make some comments. I think we have a challenging and fascinating mission that is not well known, actually, beyond the arena of global health. And I thank the IS conference and Leonard actually to have organized such a session. When I explain to friends, family members, and others that I am an ambassador, they ask me at once, "But where? And where are you based?" And when I respond, "Nowhere or everywhere in the world," I am based in Paris, and I am in charge of the fight against the pandemics. I see in the eyes of my friends or colleagues and either surprise or amazement and sometimes and certainly often profound interrogation and sometimes pity. And then comes the moment when I must respond to the question, but what's your mission then if you're an ambassador based in Paris? And so I try to explain that I have, let's say, three key aspects of my job. First, to represent my country and everywhere in international conference, such as here or in the 190-something member states, and also in international organization, and convey its political message, and also to negotiate in its on its behalf as needed. Second aspect of my mission is to, as my colleagues here, being a board member of key international organizations such as the Global Fund, and France is the first donor country in Europe of the Global Fund, UNITAID, Rollback Malaria, UNAIDS. And third, act as a gateway and a support also for French foundations, public players such as ESTER or ANRS, and NGOs also, and private sector for their international activities. So this is, as you see, a very original as Paul said, I think a unique position. Indeed, within the diplomatic world, because I am not normal, let's say, and mainstream diplomat. I speak for myself. I hope, real diplomats and a member of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And using the diplomatic tools and means, we are also at the crossroads of many worlds with very different cultures, scientific and medical world and experts, the philanthropic arena, which is rapidly growing, NGO, the bilateral diplomacy, but also the multilateral diplomacy, which is quite different. And so we are at the crossroads of different environments also, and as Paul said, the human rights, global health. So that's very fascinating, actually, but also a challenging mission. So I try to touch upon some items mentioned by Asia. I try not to repeat what Paul said. Yes, our duty, I mean, is to interact with civil society, and to I think that we among diplomats we are one of the most interactive diplomats within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. At least I speak for my country. But it's sure that it's we must increase, I mean, this interaction with civil society, which is always an asset, even though it's sometimes challenging. Asia mentioned as a danger, I mean, a potential danger, or a proxy for disengagement, as far as I remember, the appointment of AIDS ambassador, and I don't think so. On the contrary, as Leonard said, I mean, France, I mean, created, and other countries quite often, I mean, created our position at the right, at the same moment as they invested much more in global health and HIV/AIDS. So I think mainly the position of HIV/AIDS ambassador is an asset and is a way of mainstreaming HIV/AIDS and communicable disease commitment and of our country, my country. That's true, particularly domestically, as Paul said. I mean, we have a role, yes, of activism. I mean, within the administration and also mainstreaming. I mean, of HIV/AIDS and global health policy. And we are also, I think, a good. We have a key role for keeping in the commitment of political leaders towards HIV/AIDS and communicable disease policy. And externally, yes, we have an important role of advocacy, which should be developed. And I think that working as a network, that's what we do, but that's certainly what we need to do more, even more. acting as a network, expressing also ourselves as a network is needed. And we have a very important role of international advocacy. Well, I think I'll stop here and open the floor.
At this stage, and we really want this to be an interactive session, we will open up for questions from the floor. There are a number of microphones in the room. You see them. So if you please walk up to a microphone, identify yourself, and ask your question. And following a number of questions, I will let the next two ambassadors start to comment. So this will also feed into the continued presentations here from the podium. But the first question, I see at three there. Yeah.
Okay. I'm Ton Koenen. I'm director of the Dutch AIDS Fund. And I think in the Netherlands we're blessed with a very good AIDS ambassador, and we've actually experienced the great advantage of having the Dutch AIDS ambassador really promote the AIDS issue within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and to have a very good international role, and the relationship with civil society has been strengthened enormously. Nevertheless, I would like to raise an issue on, we're talking about the role of the AIDS ambassador in the international scene. When I look at the Dutch situation, we see that the HIV situation within the country is actually worsening, and I see that there is hardly a role for the AIDS ambassador there. And it might actually come to a situation where, for example, if the Netherlands is a big advocate for attention for key populations, for example, if we take the sex worker issue, internationally we have quite a liberal policy on that. But on the other hand, we see what is going on at the moment in the Netherlands on the national level regarding sex work. It's actually a very negative kind of policy, a very conservative policy, and there seems to be a disconnect there. And I think the question would be, shouldn't the AIDS ambassadors also play a major role within their national policies?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I believe all of us here would like to address that one, but it will be two of us later on. But we take five questions first. Yes.
My name is Khalil Elouardegui. I'm with ACT UP Paris, and I sit on the board of UNITAID alongside the French AIDS ambassador, Louis-Charles Viossin. First thing I'd like to provide my support to the previous statement that one of the things that we expect, one of the challenges probably of the AIDS ambassador positions is to also reconcile the nice positions that it's easy for a European government to take about how developing countries should deal with their minorities and how they should reduce discriminations and oppressive policies, and reconcile that with the fact that in Europe, in Sweden, for example, there is a policy on managing the risk of transmission of people with HIV, which is one of the hardest in the world. In France, there have been regressions also on, for example, drug use or sex workers in the past few years. And that we also feel that it's one of the challenges of your job of managing to get heard about the need to reconcile those statements with, you know, the way we do things in our countries. I'd like to say that also that we felt we were rather dubious about in ACT UP Paris about the value of the AIDS ambassador position to begin with. We were feeling that it was mostly a public relations position, somebody whose job is to go to those conferences and say that France is doing everything right. But we've come to appreciate the value of this position because it does create both relationships and path of communications that would not exist otherwise and that did not exist before. And also it does increase the level of consistency of the public response. So that's our experience of this position's existence. And my question to you is one of the key problems that we have in various of the countries, I mean, not the 0.7 countries, but the other countries, one of the problems that AIDS activists have is that the commitments that have been made by leaders in terms of funding the global AIDS fight are not kept, and there's a hiatus. And what does that say about the level of decision-making and reporting at which the AIDS ambassador position ought to be set? Shouldn't the AIDS ambassador, like I think is almost the case in the U.S., shouldn't be set at the level of the leader? Shouldn't you be reporting directly to the leader as opposed to having maybe one or two rungs between you and the leader? Thank you.
Thank you. And I see two here, but also a lady down there at microphone number one. So we shift to number one, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Sanya Reed-Smith from Third World Network in Malaysia. I was encouraged to hear from you that AIDS ambassadors are appointed because your governments believe in the importance of it, you want to make it a priority, give political leadership and ensure universal access. So my first question is to Norway. As part of the European Free Trade Association, what are you doing to stop the European Free Trade Association from requiring data exclusivity, which is a monopoly of 5 years even when there's no patent on the medicine, and patent term extensions, which means that the patent goes for longer than 20 years before you can get the generic medicine, when the EFTA is negotiating free trade agreements with developing countries? Similarly, to the four EU AIDS ambassadors, what are you all doing to ensure that the European Commission no longer demands that developing countries sign treaties and do regional patents that will mean that more antiretrovirals are patented, requiring them to do patent term extensions beyond the 20 years of monopoly, requiring them to give monopolies even for 10 years, even when there's no patent via data exclusivity, requiring them to do linkage, which stops compulsory licensing, trying to undermine parallel importation, and going for stronger enforcement measures which will make it harder for organisations like Médecins Sans Frontières to ensure that generics can get to least developed countries because they can't transship them anymore through transport hubs. And even for least developed countries, you're requiring the same provisions with just a bit of a longer time to implement them. As you know, there have been expressions of concern about these TRIPS Plus provisions from the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health, various UN committees on the rights of the child and economic, social and cultural rights, the World Health Assembly. Even the European Union Parliament has told the European Commission not to negotiate these provisions. And yet the European Commission is still demanding this from about 120 developing countries in free trade agreement negotiations currently going on. And even if there is no intellectual property chapter, a study that the European Union Commission themselves found that even a goods and services free trade agreement would harm health and poverty because of the lower tariff revenue for governments to spend on health, and because the lower tariffs would increase unemployment so people have less to spend on healthcare. So could you please tell us what you're doing to ensure that these provisions will no longer be in free trade agreements with developing countries? Thank you.
Thank you. And we take two more questions and then we'll continue from the podium. Microphone number three.
Thank you. My name is Nyara Zai. I'm Zimbabwean and the General Secretary of the World YWCA, based in Geneva. First, to thank you for being available to meet with us during the conference. We had an opportunity to meet with the Ambassador of Norway and Australia, and we hope it's a method which will continue to be privately available to as many groups as possible so that there is a quality time of exchanging of views and getting advice and information. Secondly, to also thank you for the emphasis that you are placing on issues of women and young people. We therefore welcome you as a network to work closely with the Global Coalition on Women and AIDS as a substantive partner to follow through on some of the issues that have come out in this discussion, especially on gender-based violence and how prevention of violence against women is prevention of HIV and AIDS, and also to support the efforts of the Women Won't Wait campaign, which is a global civil society effort by and focusing on issues of women's human rights, violence against women, and HIV and AIDS. It's also a movement which can enhance your messages, but also bring the collective energy of your political position and the grassroots voice, recommendations with regards to the substantive issues. We really are looking forward to your collective voice to talk about the issues of HIV and AIDS and vulnerability of especially of women and girls in situations of crisis and conflict. Currently, we don't have a comprehensive model of what is an approach which can work in crisis countries, and especially in conflict countries where even access for basic services for food might be difficult, and how therefore can we make accessible ARVs, information, and we know that women and girls are vulnerable to sexual violence, including from peacekeepers. So the whole issue of vulnerability in crisis and conflict situation, we're looking forward to your collective voice to say no to violence and no to wars and no to impunity as part of a global voice to saying yes to prevention and yes to a life with dignity and yes to possibility for many other people. My second recommendation is on financing. We have had severally a discussion around financing, and we know that your voice would be a strategic voice in Doha when the world needs to look at financing development. Could you bring a conversation around financing HIV and AIDS in the context of development financing, and how financing HIV and AIDS has to be accessible, flexible, and with impact to communities, and in a way that strengthens national and community-based organizations, which are the essence of sustainability within their own nations, of course in global partnership and in solidarity with the international networks. We would really recommend a strong message at the Doha meeting. And again, when you meet in Accra, on looking at the whole Paris principles on coordination and harmonization, efficiency and reducing of transaction costs should not be at the expense of suffocating local initiatives, because there is a very clear energy of suffocation of local initiatives in the name of harmonization, efficiency, and reduction of financial transaction costs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you for bringing up very important questions. And you can see we all take a lot of notes up here. Still, if you can be a little bit shorter and come to the questions quicker. But very important issues being brought up. The last question before we come back here.
I will be very short. I am Adolfo Lopez from the Netherlands, working for Stop AIDS Now, and I'm a person living with HIV. I would like to thank the contribution from the microphone number one, which make my question much more easier. And I see above your heads universal action now. From the perspective of a person living with HIV, the movements of people living with HIV fighting for access for treatment, it wouldn't be possible to address the issue of the property rights, the TRIPS issue. What could you individually and collectively, you ambassadors from committed governments, to change this current situation? Thank you.
Thank you for a very straightforward question. Before giving the floor, because I will ask my Australian colleague to start and talk about his role, but also to try to pick up on questions that have been raised now. And then I will ask Sigurd Mögedal from Norway to continue. And we didn't have time to talk first, Fidel. You just took office, but if you are prepared also after that to say a few words, you are most welcome. One of the issues that was raised about women and violence, we all know about that, how women and young girls are being affected. And if I should take advantage of sitting here as the chair, I could welcome you all to this very room at 6:30 tonight, and you will see a movie, a film called Women at the Frontline, I believe, produced by a Swedish filmmaker. And that is very much about how women are affected by AIDS. So if you come back at 6:30, you will see that. But now, Murray, I will give the floor to you.
Thank you. I'll try very hard not to state anything that others have said, because it's striking how similar our roles actually are. I have to confess to being the person who ruined the gender balance. My old friend, Andrew O'Keefe, was the first AusAid ambassador who left to work overseas last year, and so I've been in that position since December. I'm very grateful to Spain. I'm now not the newest AIDS ambassador. Those things said, like others, I also manage a significant part of Australia's aid program, including education and health sector policies and advising, but things also such as climate change. In that regard, I think there is an intrinsic challenge to being an AIDS ambassador because there's a huge number of meetings and you need to balance your time between AIDS and all the other corporate requests. There are certainly days I wish I was a European, especially on the 24th hour of the flight to Geneva from Sydney. But on the other hand, Australia, as the only AIDS ambassador from that region, thank you, and the one with the worst voice, is living in a region of mainly developing countries. So we have a rather different role because the advocacy is very much close to home. Just to pick up any differences from what the others have said, maybe others do as well, but I, in the end, am the one who sets Australia's policy on international AIDS activities, of course with ministerial agreement. And that's quite a useful position to have. It also, in terms of the questions on our role with domestic policy, it does give us, I think, a degree of freedom to intervene in terms of discussions and advocate to our domestic departments such as health and trade and foreign affairs. But I wouldn't want to over-claim a power in that regard. In many ways, say, the Health Department of Australia sets and manages AIDS activities and policies. They would not want me to suggest I had that role. Equally, you know, I think it's useful to be very clear that the Overseas Aid Program has the primary role through the AIDS ambassador activities overseas. A couple of final things. I think the ambassador position does give a clear access point for civil society in Australia, and I certainly have sought to have a very active role in consultation. In fact, I need the ideas of group MSN groups, sex workers, IDUs, people living with AIDS, and seeking to build up broader connections with others such as faith-based organisations. And in our case, we certainly use a lot of those groups and pay them to build capacity of civil society overseas, and it's half an hour too late to catch Asia on that one, but the answer is yes. I think also we need to go out and seek new voices, as others have much more eloquently said. It does also allow you a little leeway, I think, to approach your own political system. I can seek to meet with members of the opposition in what can sometimes be an adversarial political climate, and not in a way that an average public servant could just seek to do. So I think that's a very handy leeway. You have to be careful. I had to stop myself lecturing a Senate committee recently on circumcision in its finer details. We do have a very specific role, and it's important, I think, to lecture parliaments, but you have to realise that you have only certain leeway in doing so. And probably you keep it for the more active and challenging policy positions. Finally, I think just to listen to others, a number of us have a problem that we do have to, within our own aid systems, balance the investments in AIDS with a lot of other things. International health partnerships is coming up, other MDG diseases, funding for these things, policy positions, I think challenge a lot of us, because whilst we're advocates on AIDS, I think we also have to manage the broader, say, health thrust of our country's aid activities. Three questions I would finish with that trouble me. I'm finding we're always, I think, wondering how we have a greater impact in our roles, and that's important to hear your voices today on that. It's hard to engage, from this position, to engage civil society in developing countries, except on very intermittent visits. It'd be good to find better ways. And thirdly, I'm realising, having handed the gender issues to another division head recently, just how much of the AIDS issues and the future of solving the issue is in fact gender-based, be it the role of males or women violence against women, etc. And as I've been now in 7 months in the job, I thought I'd share that as one of the learnings I've seen in my time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And just to inform you, I also asked Sigrun Mögedal at the end of this session to summarize a little bit about your feelings and our feelings about the role. But since there were also questions put directly to Norway and also for other reasons, I give the floor to Sigrun right now.
And also because I have to make up this gender balance, right? So I should speak at least twice. Hi, this is... a great session in the sense that it's more important for us to have this broad contact with the group. I have worked for two governments as an AIDS ambassador since 2005. I think that the roles and the ambiguity in the role and the challenges and the potential, as my colleagues have explained, are very clear. I think there is more good, more potential than the risks about it, but I think both are important. Also, it's important that you know that we're part of an intergovernmental system. A lot of the things we talk about here are also part of intergovernmental negotiations, where the skills of diplomacy, where our partners in the ministry have their own special competence and skills. So one of the questions that was raised about coherence, of course, when we're part of that diplomacy network, we have the scope of AIDS that almost gets into all parts of foreign policy or diplomacy. We can engage, but we do not have the competence on all those fields. And also, that means some of those intergovernmental negotiations are terribly difficult, frustrating, because it has to do with negotiating competing interests. And none of us are able to turn our back and say there's no competing interest. Even here, we see there are some competing interests, even between different groups, between different concerns. So let's be real about the situation where we live in the world with competing interests. Let me also then note a little bit on leadership, because it strikes me that we somehow get a too prominent role as leaders from a few OECD countries that have happened to see AIDS as a place where they also would want to engage with more than money, where they want to engage, and I think that's actually the case, engaging with more than money, but also with the skills to build alliances, negotiate, engage broader, and so on. But where are the countries which are sort of in the G77 group or the middle-income groups? AIDS is global, and it becomes very strange if we sort of create a leadership just around what Asia called donors. Because in a sense, in AIDS, we're all partners. We all have the problem. We all have to get up with our resources and our partnerships. So it is a bit. And the other leadership that we might blur is that we hear this conference maybe stronger than ever before, the need for positive leadership, the need for youth leadership, the need for civil society leadership, the way we've heard. Up to now, it's been governmental leadership, politicians up and rise, UN and so on, science. We shouldn't blur that leadership. We should somehow play our part, but not take it. So that's important for me to say. So what do we do to reconcile policies, national and international? That's one of the big challenges for Norway, because we're somehow told, I think even in the press in Norway, it says we're better internationally than we are nationally, and we heard that here too. We've created the National AIDS Council that tried to bring those two pieces together. And we intend to strengthen that conversation, but I think the way you've pointed it out is extremely important, since most of us sit in foreign ministries. We're not somehow directly engaged on the national scene. And let's stop thinking that AIDS is something that we can deal with far away, because it has to do with even our civil society networks are both local and global. So we need that link. We need to be accountable to that too. And that's why those of you that are here that are curious about our role, keep on watching it, keep on correcting it, keep on engaging it with it. Also through the colleagues you have in our national networks. Because we have too much power and influence. And if that is not just stewardship over money that you can control, you need to help us to be accountable and not to blur where the leadership and need to come from. I have to get into the patenting and trade, which is an excellent example of both competing priorities and where there are ongoing negotiations. Those of you that are specialists know about the IGWG process that was associated with WHO that still goes on. You know about Doha and the additional conditionalities that was referred to as TRIPS Plus. I don't know how many of you know all the details of that, but the one that asked the question knew a lot about it. Also, she knew a lot about the difference between EFTA and EU. Norway is not a member of EU. In a way, we have a bit more freedom, but we're also part of EFTA. And just to give you that illustration of how tricky this is, Norway has fish. We're quite interested in fish. We work together with Switzerland that has drugs. Now, when we go to a country to negotiate the part, because Doha agreement we all accept, and then it's the question of these bilateral or trilateral agreements. Now, when you sit in those negotiations, both the country you negotiate with, like the third party country, be it Thailand or India or another country, has some interests. Now, we also have some interests. Now, what is the rules of the game? Should you say you could never put on sort of additional agreements that allows your fish or your drugs or that third party like Thailand or India might have another thing, and then you make a deal around that? Should that be forbidden, or should it be on the table? And then what are the rules that guides that decision? Now, Norway has a policy on that. Norway says that we should never impose on that country that we negotiate with additional conditionalities to the Doha agreement. But we also want to allow that country, informed by their interests, to put that as part of the cards on the table in trade negotiations. Now, we know that some would want to say that should never happen. We respect the countries that we negotiate with to be able to say we don't want to. But then they also need the information. And then they also need to be not unduly pressured. And that's that part of the game. I'm sorry that I took that long to explain exactly that, but I think it's important for you also to understand the dynamics of foreign policy on that. I leave the other things to come back to. I think extremely important points that we heard on women and how we bring AIDS, for instance, into the other meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Sigrun. And and as you could hear, Sigrun Mögedal can cover a broad range of matters, not only AIDS, but I believe also that is what you can expect from a former State Secretary for Development that is part of your life. Spain? Fidel Lopez.
Thank you, Leonard. Good morning. My name is Fidel Lopez Alvarez, and I've just recently been appointed as AIDS ambassador. I'm the second in Spain, which in fact is going parallel to the increasing role of Spain internationally in the fight against AIDS. We had been internally in Spain very successful in fighting against AIDS, providing not only the universal and free access to all, but also in the policy of prevention, in the reduction of damages, and obviously in promoting and respecting the human rights of those affected by VHH. As far as the role of AIDS ambassador, I share, in fact, much, if not all, of what has been said here previously by my colleagues. But I wanted to emphasize that it's the only group that I know that the governments have nominated AIDS ambassador for a specific group internationally. This is a tradition that every foreign ministry could have some ambassador at large for a specific issues, but not internationally. That's the first group I know. So that, in fact, reflects the importance that our governments are given to the fight against AIDS. And I just want to also make some reference to some of the questions, although they were the most directed to Netherlands colleague. But on the role of AIDS ambassador internally, you could take into account that we work also not only directly with our leaders, but because we report to them. In fact, in my case, I report to the Vice Minister for Development Cooperation. But in our case, we work in coordination with the Minister of Health, also with some governments in our regions. So we can really make a role in convincing our leaders in focusing the priorities on the fight against AIDS. And as also has said the Australian colleague, the role also of informing and reporting to our parliament means also that we really do our internal role. Obviously, there are possibilities to make better, but we will try to do that, obviously. Thank you.
Thank you, and we are so happy that you could come. When we met as a group in New York in June during the UNGA session, it was your predecessor, so now we welcome you here. We will take a second round here because there were more questions addressed also to European Union countries and other questions. But and we have 25 minutes left of the session, and we will have a summary by Sigrun Mögedal at the end. But I will still give the opportunity if there are two or three questions, very straightforward, quick questions. That's no more people stand up now. That's enough. But you must be very brief. Number four.
Me first. Thank you very much, and thank you everybody for your presentations. My name is Julia Del Amo, and I work in Madrid in Spain. I work in the epidemiology of HIV in migrant populations. And listening to you all, I can see the role of AIDS ambassadors to help these populations who are often deprived of all rights and are migrants living with HIV. And I talk of Europe because it's the area that I know more. But there are many migrants all over the world living with HIV, fearing for their lives, and also with the danger of deportation. So my question to you is, what is the role of AIDS ambassadors as ambassadors of the large amounts of migrants with HIV living all over the world? Thank you.
Thank you. Number three, and then we go to one, but one from three here.
Yes, hello. My name is Ferdinand Strijdhagen. I'm working for SCHOA Foundation, which is the Dutch National Institute for Health for LGBT. And I'm speaking also on behalf of 17 partners in the Global South, which we work with. Of course, I'm very interested on the LGBT issue. And just to give you the opportunity to make a brief reply on my question, the question is the following. What is your a personal achievement on which you are very proud on the LGBT issue in the last years? And if you haven't been in office for so long, maybe you can explain what is your deepest wish on the LGBT issue on the topic of HIV and AIDS. Thank you.
Thank you. Number one down there.
My name is Roger Cassidy. I'm an executive director at Accept in Oslo, Norway, and sit in the National HIV/AIDS Council together with Sigrun. I want to follow up the first question and make it a little bit more European specific. If I'm not mistaken, everyone on the panel except the Australian colleague is a member of the Dublin Convention. And we experience, with one-third of the people living in Norway with HIV, have a migration background, that often our people are returned to other European countries and then repatriated to their original homelands. Norway has a policy that says that people should not be returned, HIV-positive migrants should not be returned to places where they cannot get adequate help. We experience this is not the case. So my question is twofold. Is it possible to coordinate better the information about where HIV treatment is accessible before people are returned? And is it possible to coordinate on a European basis that people not return from Norway to a country where it might be much easier to send them out of Europe. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we go to microphone number 3. And please do not stand up, more people, because we have 4 questioners up here, and I will allow the 4 of you, but then we have to continue. Number 3 here.
Thank you, Leonard. First of all, I want to express my appreciation for allowing this interaction, giving time to us, so thank you for that. Ton Smith's Asian Harm Reduction Network, based in Chiang Mai in Thailand. My question actually is, if possible, to all of you, and that is, what are the 2 or 3 action points you would take with you actually from this particular conference? Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Yeah, continue with 3 here.
Thérèse Letu, I am from the GBC, Global Business Coalition Europe. Thank you for participating in this panel. I have 2 quick questions. France has the UE presidency, but it seems that there is no health issues on the top of a priority, on the top agenda. So my question is how you, as AIDS ambassador, could collaborate in order that health would be one of the priorities of the European presidency, in the future. My second question is how I am representing here the private sector, and especially in Europe, it's a network of 80 companies. I'd like to know how we can collaborate together in order that the UE president's institution be more involved in public-private partnership. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Hi, I'm Sam from Australia. I represent a group of women living with HIV in Victoria. My question to you, perhaps, is regarding immigrations, because we so often face a lot of our members saying that they've been denied entry, or they wanted to, for instance, this conference, a lot of our members could not get immediate visa access to the United States. I guess my question is, what role do you play as AIDS ambassadors in such policies? And do you think there are effective policies in reducing the spread of HIV, denying entrance to countries of people living with HIV?
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Bebbington from Australia. First of all, I just want to say thank you to you all for committing your time and your influence to HIV. I know, for example, that Murray has a very busy and broad portfolio, so it's, we appreciate his commitment to HIV. My question is in relation to the role of the ambassadors in terms of advocacy. And during this conference, there's been quite a bit of discussion about the need to create enabling legal environments to support HIV programs, and specifically the need to remove laws which criminalise homosexuality. So I'd like to ask each of you what commitments you will make here and now towards achieving this goal. So thank you.
Thank you. Then we come back to the panel here, and Paul, you were waving first before, and then Richard, yeah. And then I want you to address as many as possible of the questions that have come up since you spoke last time. Please.
Okay, thanks. It's a whole range of questions, but I'll try to see how many I'll address and my colleagues. The question was raised by Ton Kuhne about the almost a disconnect that's existing. He was referring to the Netherlands, asking about the mandate of the AIDS ambassador. Indeed, there is a growing conservatism in the Netherlands, and there is a possibility of this disconnect getting larger and larger. What you're asking as an AIDS ambassador, how far can you get involved with your own national policies? Well, I think we all have a rather large mandate, and I think we'll use that. But the mandate is, I consider my role as working for the whole of the government, not only for the Minister of Development Cooperation, Foreign Affairs, but the whole of government. However, it's limited to pretty much our border. So my responsibility is limited to working abroad, and I think that works for all of us. But maybe there's also the solution. I can actually discuss issues in other countries.
So what we should do with this position in the Netherlands, while I have to keep my mouth shut, I'll invite all my colleagues here to get involved and solve the issue in the Netherlands. but it is a problem. I mean, it is a... the European Commission was mentioned a couple of times. TRIPS was already answered by Sigun. I think all of us, at least those who are a member of the European Union, do have responsibility with the Commission. I personally think that the Commission should do much more on health, and specifically also on HIV/AIDS, on a whole broad range. And we are vocal on that. We should become perhaps more vocal on that, because we're members of it. We only represent, however, four countries in the European Commission, but we're also generating ideas of all of us working together to be more influential towards the Commission. And then I come to another point. There was also a lady was talking about a collective voice of the AIDS ambassadors. We all firmly believe that by working together, we can be much more powerful. It's 1 + 1 = 3. All of us can be much stronger. There's also a little bit of a concern, and Sigun was relating to that. We are pretty much all representatives of Western governments. If this group of AIDS ambassadors wants to maintain its credibility and to become even more powerful, we hope we can also, we're going to be joined by AIDS ambassadors from other countries, especially from the south. There is now an AIDS ambassador in El Salvador, but hopefully there will be one from India, from Brazil. We can be, I think, as a collective body, be much stronger. The question about migrants. Migrants are, in our policy, considered as a vulnerable group, as key population. When we talked about those groups of people that are most vulnerable to HIV infection, we include migrants. So our policy includes them. Includes them with all other key populations. However, I think, and that's also a little bit in this conference, migrants should be much higher on the agenda. The risks for the group itself and for the for them as a group transmitting HIV to a larger population and population in other countries should be addressed a bit more. And we also have to accept and take a responsibility in it also. Yeah, Ferdinand, your question, I mean, where are we very proud of? That's difficult to say. Although, if I say it from my point of view, you know, our policy is so much based on key population, on LGBT. Everywhere we are, we are very vocal on the position of LGBT, also in a statement in a high-level meeting in New York. I also want to add to that, and I'm, as a Dutchman, I'm proud of this system we have, that we work very much always together with civil society, with yourselves, with AIDS funds, but with all the other groups. We are a group that together are very strong for those who need our help, and LGBT is definitely one of them. So I think if you say, where are we proud of? I mean, we should be all proud of the achievements we have made, although it should even increase. Ton's question about 2 to 3 action points, it's an interesting one. I would like to have a little bit more time to consider that. Well, one is, of course, you work on harm reduction in Asia. Well, one of the conclusions we've taken, the minister said it earlier, that we're going to have a summit, a donor conference, on harm reduction in the Netherlands, and we hope to have as many as possible involved. Another thing is that's what came out of this conference, that's what I take home, the concern, and I think my colleagues share that, on how to make sure that HIV/AIDS is part of that broader development agenda. We're heading towards the MDG summit in September in New York. We have to make sure, and we had a discussion on that yesterday, that HIV is gets its rightful place on the philosophical, well, that's a little bit too serious, but on the conviction that HIV/AIDS has such a strong impact on all the other MDGs. But that's a concern and a challenge to make sure that is going to happen. Okay, thank you, Leonard. I'll leave it today.
Thank you. Sorry, Paul. There are so many relevant questions that have came up. But to allow time for Sigrun to give us a summary at the end, we would like now, I would like to plead to my colleagues to be, stick within 2 minutes in their comments. There is one question that came up very directly, and maybe you could come back to that, or maybe not. And that was where we are placed in the system, if we are placed high enough or not high enough. And the comparison was made to the U.S. model. Luis Schall.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, I would like to respond to Halil first. Well, commitments as made or kept so far, even though there are clear challenges for the future, but that's clear to me. As far as the level of HIV/AIDS ambassadors and the appropriate level under the within in the governmental framework, I would make several comments. The first one is that there is no other example of ambassadors. I mean, under the president of the republic in France, and we are not a presidential regime such as the U.S., but we have another constitutional arrangement. Ambassadors are under the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and all ambassadors are under the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Well, another comment is that this question has not been raised so far, so it can be raised, but it has not been raised so far, and thank you for raising it, actually. And third, my view is that it wouldn't change things in practice, because we have, as HIV/AIDS ambassadors, my predecessors, Michel and others, and myself, are in contact with different and direct contacts with the different levels of the leadership in our country, meaning Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Prime Minister's Office, and President of the Republic's Office. Very briefly, as far as the LGBT issues are concerned, I mean, I'm happy that the French message, I mean, to the UNGAS last June, I mean, included sexual minorities issues as well as the message from the president to the conference. I think that's an important aspect. On France and health, I mean, on the EU agenda, health is clearly on the EU agenda for this semester. And there are two priorities in the development policy segment. One is on decentralized cooperation, and another one is on health, and it's health risk coverage, health insurance, and it's directly related to HIV/AIDS because it's how to establish systems within countries which allow sustainable financing. We have the solidarity levy on airline tickets, innovative financing, but we also deeply need domestic sustainable financing. And we think that health insurance, all forms of health insurance are key. And that's why it was put by Bernard Kouchner on the agenda of the EU. On just my last comment on freedom of circulation. I mean, France has been an advocate of freedom of circulation, and at UNAIDS with the establishment of this task force and group, and also at the G8 level where our president was the first to put this topic on the table during the last G8 in Japan. Sorry for being too long.
Thank you. Murray, do you want to add something at this stage?
Thanks. I'll try to be quick in rapid order. The question of deepest wishes, I'll have two bites. To be frank, my deepest wish is that many of the neighbouring countries we partner with would actually admit that they have MSM people in their population. I think in terms of outcome, we to be able to better deal with these burgeoning widespread heterosexual epidemics that certainly look to be coming in Papua New Guinea and possibly Nepal. Action points from the conference. Personally, some of the issues on migrants, I feel I need to take back, and we need to move more into our policy settings. And I think some of the broader human rights issues as well. Can I just address the private sector question? Not about Europe, obviously, but we have had some success with business in an Asia-Pacific business coalition, which is now, apart from being based in Sydney, set up coalitions in Papua New Guinea, Indonesia and Fiji, and certainly in PNG is a major deliverer of assistance. The CEO of that group, the business coalition, is now in dialogue with Vietnam, India and China on similar approaches. And these are just a totally different way of getting at prevention and mobilising expert capacity to deal with population groups on that issue. Sam from Australia on immigration. Yeah, look, personally I do see it as a role to advocate on that. And just to remind you, in Australia, people can walk across at low tide from PNG to Australia, and they do carry, unfortunately, very high TB rates and an increasing prevalence of AIDS. So this is, in Australia, an awful thing, but also a sharp reminder to the Australian public of the relevance of these issues and why you have to assist countries. And very finally, in terms of appointment, ambassadors in the Australian system are appointed by the head of state in consultation with the cabinet of the government. So in a notional sense, it's a quite powerful level of appointment. As people have picked up, though, we are bureaucrats in a system. If I was to have a Mark Dybul type appointment, that would be nice. I'd much rather have the $58 billion, though. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, you saw me moving up to our Spanish colleague and asked if he wanted to come in again, but he said he was prepared to listen to you, Sigrun, for the summary. So we have about 5 minutes left, and I believe that Sigrun will give us a very good summary of this. Just to say from the Swedish side that, of course, this about coherence, about national, international policy is so important. We work under different mandates. My mandate is the international work. But since what I heard here today, and I also heard in other sessions, reference being made to Sweden, of course there are a number of issues that I will bring back to Sweden also from this session, and the need to work on this coherence matter. So having said that, Sigrun, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Leonard. And of course, it's impossible to make a good summary of the wide themes that we've... But just to put our discussion in some perspective, I think first of all, we need to agree that everything we've talked about is for a purpose, and that purpose is universal access. So whatever we talk about in terms of specifics or the broad needs to be geared to and accountable to that purpose, and I think all agrees on that. It is important to maintain because there are voices out there that think that maybe we're too focused on AIDS and not on all of the other goals. This conference and this conversation, I think, keeps on holding on to a total commitment to move on the universal access, and that's the purpose. We've also heard that in a sense we're at the crossroads now, as my French colleague said. Multiple stakeholders. The world is not built around governments only anymore, as it was when we created the UN, as it is within the international scene of negotiations and relations. It's as if there is a new foreign policy. We've said AIDS has created a new public health. In a way, in this environment of multiple partners, recognition of the voice of many players, I think, in many fields, but definitely in AIDS, is an example of how governments need to team up with others, both in policy making and in accountability, and for that, it is necessary with the right mechanisms and possibilities to be in conversation. And a good example that we haven't exactly mentioned, but indirectly, is that It's hard for NGOs to get into the UN when UN talks about AIDS. Now, it's not so obvious that governments are here at the IAS conference to be in dialogue. So if we should take seriously sort of the new environment, which I think we'll see more and more indefinitely around private sector that we heard, if you see where the energy is now on the AIDS response, it is not with governments. Let's face it. The energy is what we found here with youth, with communities, with groups like MSM. I'm a bit worried that the energy is not as strong with the IDU constituency, but apart from that, with women and private sector. And I think in what we also haven't heard that much is how private sector industry in some countries with a heavy load actually now are in the forefront of looking at what they can do, not just for charity, but because they need to do that for productivity, for their bottom line, for being a good actor in their social environment. So let's look for that leadership and build it into this new environment with multiple stakeholders. Then we've talked about the need for visibility, that not for visibility of AIDS ambassadors, but using those roles to make visible issues that are easily covered over, make stronger voices that are easily not heard. We could talk about many of those issues, but we've heard a willingness to give that visibility, ask the right questions, keep on consistently exploring and giving, because so often some of these issues are just put under the table rather than on top. Then we've talked about coherence, consistency, and that's where we've also talked about a watch function for all of us, but particularly for you. You are justified in keeping on asking about coherence. We need to do that, but we need, what do governments do? What do politicians do in these cases? They respond when they see that there is a demand for that response. So within this world of competing priorities, that demand, that watch, that consistent information about what's happening is something that we need to work together on. We've talked about legal issues and the need for engagement when it comes to barriers to access. And part of what we said, some of the most invisible tends to be migrants, particularly those that are not legally there. And what we heard about, the need for information, access to treatment. Travel restriction, a major breakthrough. We know that in terms of immigrant labor market, what's going to happen around migrants, there will also be a conference in the Philippines soon. So taking the messages from here, and also they are bringing the consistency. Criminalization, we've hardly touched, but we know it's one of those issues where, based on the fact that there are barriers to access that need to be addressed. So the final word is the word conversation. I think this conversation has been terrific, a lot better than I had hoped. And thank you for that conversation. And let me, on behalf of those of us that are here, say we're ready to continue that conversation. And I know that our colleague from the U.S., who would have liked to be here, also is interested in that conversation. We're not always aligned. We use our network together also to unpack some of those issues where our governments have different positions. But that conversation is about the most healthy we can do. So thank you.
Thank you, Sigrun. And since Sigrun has thanked all of you, let me also thank all of you here, because It is great, this job to be an AIDS ambassador. In many ways, I believe that's the most interesting job I have had, but also in many ways the most challenging job, and because it touches upon so many things in the world and in society. And you have reminded us today even more about the complexity. So then it is so great to be part of a group like this and to have a dialogue in this group. So thank you, dear colleagues, for coming here. Thank you, all of you, for coming here. Let's continue to work together in the fight. And for those of you who are free tonight at 6:30, come back to this room for a good movie. Thank you.